Greetings, Guardians. My name is Bife here. What follows is an interview that I did with Alison Lurs, the Bungie narrative director, while I was at Bungie playing Renegades early. This discusses some things. We keep things relatively spoiler-free, but if you've seen any of the Vidocs, anything that is a preview, and if you've seen the first campaign mission, which I will have posted at some point, then yeah, it's going to discuss some of that. If you want to stay completely spoiler-free, I would recommend turning off this video now, but otherwise, enjoy 35 minutes of me and Alison talking about Renegades and Star Wars and Destiny and all the interesting things in between. Two other really quick notes. The footage in the background is just generic capture of the Lawless Frontier that I'd had while I was at Bungie, and the soundtrack is something from Renegades itself as well. If you're listening to the music, this was captured by Sammy Cat while she was recording a bunch of her stuff. So thank you. I imagine anything you hear today will also be available on the Renegades OST. Check in the normal Bungie channels for that when you're looking for it. I'm sure it will appear at some point on YouTube. Anyway, enjoy.
And there were never any errors to begin.
None. It was
never
perfect.
Need
it's
to
perfect.
Restart.
we'll need to paint a scene for what this room looks like so people at home know.
How would you describe this as a mix of like a speakeasy and a foxhole is like the mix of like vibes I'm getting.
I am at war, but also I need to stay late because our quarterly report is due in the morning at the office. Mm-hmm. It is both at the same time.
Mm. And in the middle of it all, there is a table with a bunch of winnings and a card game.
A lot of coins, a lot of cards. There's a gun.
Mm-hmm.
There's a ghost. Yeah.
Mm. And there is a notebook which does not actually have a ton of questions. I got my questions here. Alison, so
Hi.
Good to talk again.
Hello! So good to see you, friend.
It's great to be back doing another interview. Aside from anything else, it's been really exciting after having played Renegades for a couple of days and having seen a bunch of the content that's in here. Quick note on all of that as well, like, there will be no spoilers. As best I know, it's probably going to be... I don't know this, but I'm going to, like, throw this out there. It's probably the first campaign mission that's being shown off in recording, and then... After that, it's basically completely spoiler-free territory. Mm-hmm. So these questions are designed to entice as many answers as possible, but, you know, we're not looking to give away the secrets of where the entire Fate Saga is going.
I will keep my secrets.
All right, then, keep your secrets.
What's the wrong franchise?
Yes,
wrong franchise.
Yes, absolutely. Different small creature that lives in a hovel. Yes.
Very true.
Okay, so, first of all, this is kind of more on the housekeeping side of things with... The fact that it's a Destiny and Star Wars crossover, I think that there was a really legitimate fear when this was announced that this entire expansion of Renegades would kind of start to erode Destiny's visual and narrative identity because there was a lot of Star Wars being introduced, you know? There were questions of whether there was going to be too much Star Wars in this and it wouldn't feel like Destiny. So I guess my first question is really, how did you find the balance in all of this? How did you go about in the process of putting these two IPs together and then saying how much is too much on either side?
Yeah, we did it by entering with the same fear that you're talking about. I think all of us, at least on the narrative team, approach this with a very healthy sense of terror of like, how do we do this right? Like, how do we make this not just like a fun experience for our new Star Wars fans who may be joining us, but also make sure that it speaks to what Destiny is and who we are and the stories that we want to tell. This was such a unique challenge, and we decided to approach it by just experimenting as much as we could. Flicking all the different levers of, okay, how does it feel if we play with Star Wars archetypes? Oh, that feels good. How does it feel if we play with Star Wars quotes? Bad. It feels very bad if we do that. There was a lot of futzing and fiddling to try and find the right balance between Star Wars versus Destiny. And it took us a while to figure out what that balance was. Originally, we began by wanting to make our collaborators feel like they were involved. And speaking, of course, of our friends at Lucasfilm Games, who were great collaborators when they worked with us. Initially, we found, like, okay, here's where the right level of Star Wars is. How do we bring in the Destiny next to that? And in the end, the equation that we kind of landed on was allowing sound and visuals to do most of the carrying for that real like Star Wars feel, and for the story to pick up with the themes and the archetypes and fill those themes and archetypes with what we would usually do in Destiny. We found out that we were doing this collaboration at the same time that we were planning the Fate Saga. And so we knew from the start that this wouldn't be just like a side experience or like a one-off that we would never talk about ever again. It had to be integral to the Fate Saga.
Mm. That actually sort of goes and answers one of my questions for later,
right.
Which I think I might Yeah, that's actually, you know what, I'll jump onto that, you know? With it being distinctly Star Wars, mm-hmm. there was always the chance of the influences subsuming Destiny. How did you go about making this a part of the Fate saga, though, as opposed to just a single episode? Pun not intended, I guess?
It's all good. We did it by kind of thinking about two things in parallel, right? We knew that this collaboration would be happening, and we knew that we were developing the Fate saga overall. And so when one of the principles that we had in mind when working on Renegades was following this kind of Venn diagram idea that if Star Wars and Destiny are a Venn diagram, we want everything that's in the middle that would appear in both of those franchises that made sense in both of those worlds. And we applied that thinking to the Fate saga as well. Star Wars has plenty of great big cosmic binaries of things fighting each other. It also has plenty of big space magic weirdness, and the Nine fit very well into that idea. It also was really convenient that this gave us an excuse to start thinking about what's our parallel to the Sith, which very obviously are the Dredgens. Mm-hmm. And understanding that, like, oh, duh, our center should be a Dredgen here, that felt like a really nice pairing to go with the Nine, given that the Sith have such a unique relationship and they always come in two.
Mm-hmm. Something we'll get onto later, but even down to the naming convention, right? There is both a Darth Bane in yes. the Star Wars canon and a Dredgen Bane in the Destiny canon yep. for context. So it's just, it ends up being perfect. I think yeah. everyone has always sort of, anyone who's read a bunch of the lore and mm-hmm. been up to date on the story of Last Word Thorn and everything that happens with the Weapons of Sorrow,
yes.
You know, I feel like that parallel has been obvious from the beginning because it's not a name, it's a title.
Exactly.
You know, just in the same way that Darth Vader is not actually called Darth Vader, it's a title.
Yeah,
you know?
And the same way that the Sith would speak of, like, did you know about, you know, so-and-so, we also get to say, like, of course you know of Dredgen Yor. Like, everyone, mm-hmm. those two things sing really nicely together, so
yeah.
we should play with them.
Absolutely. Returning to some other things, this actually brings up a very important question about mm-hmm. what is and isn't canon. I think it's, mm-hmm. You know, something that's been touched on before, but for the sake of anyone who's listening to this fresh and who doesn't necessarily know, I think it's important to go ahead and draw a fairly obvious line in the sand when it's been said and to sort of cut through some confusion. So, true or false, Star Wars and Destiny are now in the same universe and share the same canon?
Absolutely not.
Good.
No.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. With the division of everything that's going on, like, now that that's clearly in place, are there elements of Star Wars canon that will make their way into Destiny in any manner? Are there elements of Destiny canon that make their way into Star Wars? Also no, right?
Correct. This is also a no. We are using this collaboration as a chance to find, again, like, all those things that sing to each other, that are overlapping, that work really nicely, but these two worlds are very separate and will never become intermingled with one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there will always, you know, I mean, we have the equivalents that stand out and sing so clearly,
mm-hmm.
and those equivalents have been there for years, but
exactly.
it's always important to know, like, yeah, the Spider has always been kind of the Jabba the Hutt figure,
yes.
you know,
yeah.
and when you look at Dredgens, they've always kind of been that sort of analog that follows along
yeah.
from the Sith.
Drifter
know?
Has always had a lot of Han Solo in him,
mm-hmm.
And I think that's a result of us living in a fun and complicated world where we exist among many stories at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, I think it's fair to say that Star Wars and Destiny, when you look at Destiny's original iteration, Star Wars is mentioned a lot as one of the inspiral kind of sources for the entire franchise. And it makes a lot of sense because they're both mythic sci-fi,
mm-hmm.
you know? They both have these futuristic worlds where you can have quick fusion technology and energy weapons and space travel,
sure.
but you're still asking big philosophical questions about the universe, and Fate saga is most obviously about the nature of fate and whether we are actually in control as we've assumed for so long. But Star Wars has a lot of that too. They talk about bringing balance to the Force in Star Wars and how
mm-hmm.
the Force has a will of its own and, you know, the nature of our destinies and how the universe itself intermingles. There's a lot of shared DNA there.
There is. There's a lot of differences, too. One of the really cool parts about this collaboration was being able to chat with the Lucasfilm Games writers and learn more about, like, the rules of Star Wars. And we got to teach them some of the rules of Destiny, too, in turn. It was really fun to get to surprise them with some of the parts of our lore that maybe are a little bit under the surface, and they got to surprise us with some stuff, too. But as we were working together, learning what mattered to them was really interesting and helped illuminate for us some things of our own lore that we hadn't really thought in the same way before.
Mm-hmm. That's actually going to be one of my next big questions about
yeah.
these kind of, like, overarching Star Wars and Destiny meshing together kind of questions
mm-hmm.
is what was that relationship of push and pull like with Lucasfilm? Because obviously when it, and you know, maybe this is one of those moments where I'm making an assumption here, but mm-hmm. there is, whenever you're doing an homage like this, it's important to kind of get that balance right, but there's also the incentive for either side to sort of go ahead and be like, it has to be iconically Star Wars and therefore it needs to be this, or uh-huh. it has to be recognizably and unquestionably Destiny, so it's got to have this.
Sure, sure. Right?
Like, what was the relationship of push and pull like with working with Lucasfilm?
Honestly, it was so positive. Any good collaboration is kind of like a marriage. Like, it's about two different sides working together to find something that works for all parties. And something I really loved about Lucasfilm Games was how much they were willing to just like sit down and just like play with us and collaborate and come up with different ideas and share experiences from different sides and discover together what this meant. On their side, they haven't done a collaboration quite like this before. And so it was up to us to work together to figure out, okay, what's the version that we want to do together? Like, what's the version that feels really good and true to both of us? When we first went down on day one of meeting our friends at Lucasfilm Games for the first time, all of us were kind of nervous getting into the room at the same time. We weren't really sure like how this meeting was going to go, who would start first. And so I started to break the ice just by passing out some post-its to the writers on their side and asking, like, write down the bad version. What's mm-hmm. what's the version that terrifies you? And we wrote down the same thing on our end. And we turned a nervous moment into like an actual laugh. Like, we all felt really positive, like reading through like these nightmare versions that we were writing on cards. And that allowed us to find a starting point of what does the version we want to make look like? The version that makes us feel good. And right. that's what we wanted to collaborate on together. And over the course of that entire day, we got to teach them about Destiny. And we started to find those little crossover moments, those characters that make sense in both worlds, those ideas that make sense in both worlds. It was really fun to work with such a mature, fun partner.
Mm-hmm. That's really good to hear. Aside from anything else, I know that I mentioned at the very beginning, but the apprehension about something like this in the community was pretty palpable when it was released. There were sort of two camps, which was, oh my gosh, it's Star Wars and Destiny. This is, you know, this is really exciting. This mm-hmm. is the peanut butter and jelly sandwich that I've always wanted, and it's always felt right like this. And the other side was, there is Star Wars in my Destiny. What the hell? What is going on here?
Yeah, and we have to make a game for both. Right. And we have to convince both that, yeah, we can do both of these things at the same time, and it can be a unique experience mm-hmm. That isn't alienating. The story team's primary goal was to never break immersion for the player. They should always feel like they're still playing Destiny, and they should feel like they're having a Star Wars.
So, jumping into a little bit more of the Star Wars side of things...
Yeah.
This is gonna like get into some nerd fandom that I have had since my childhood, so I'm very excited about some of this. But I want to go ahead and ask, referring to the whole narrative team, but also personally, if you're so inclined, there are a ton of amazing things out there in the world of Star Wars media. You know, mm-hmm. comics, TV shows, books, movies, games, all sorts of things. I could go on and on forever, and inevitably it's always gonna go back to the Old Republic era. But where did the narrative team draw the inspiration for Renegades from across all of that Star Wars media?
Yeah, our primary foundation that we decided on with Lucasfilm Games was using kind of like the bare skeleton of New Hope. That was going to be the version that we knew that players who were coming in would probably be expecting to see the most. It's the version that most of us were familiar with. And so we had this like shared foundation of just like New Hope episode 4 that was going to be kind of like the like underlying foundation of whatever we were going to build on top. But all of us had so much variance in our background of what kind of Star Wars experience we like. I work with the biggest prequels fan on the planet. She is amazing. And I also work with some fans of like the later sequels who see lots of different points of inspiration to draw from. I played a lot of KOTOR back in the day. And so being able to like...
You can't see it, people, but I'm raising my hands and cheering.
Bring in some of that was really exciting. I also play a lot of the tabletop versions of Star Wars that have come out in the last few years, which are spectacularly designed. I love those games so much. So there was a lot of different corners of Star Wars that got to make it in here.
Hell yeah. I'm gonna insert a question because you've hit the you hit the phrase that I absolutely
I said
love.
You said
five letters and
his
those
eyes
letters
rolled back
that did
and
KOTOR.
Then stood up and he looked for the weapon. Yeah.
I'm gonna go ahead and throw this out there because it's just something that I've been thinking about as of this morning, just after I submitted all the questions. KOTOR 2, in particular the story of Kreia, aka, somewhat spoilers for a 20-year-old game, Darth Treya.
Yes.
Interesting ideas about whether there is actually control of your own destiny, and the idea that there's a larger thing, bigger than you, that is controlling instead, and how that is kind of malicious. It's very much in line with what's going on with the Nine.
I'm stamping my fingers.
Yeah, it's,
yes.
Such, it's such a rich kind of narrative comparative like exploration to make, and it's just... I can't stop thinking about it now that I've had that thought, and it's so exciting.
Yeah, we'll get to it, I'm sure, but there's a lot of Revan in Bale. Bale's a great melange of several different fantastic Star Wars villains, as well as several villains from things that aren't games at all. So yeah, we had a lot of fun finding those pieces of inspiration and not using them like as a crutch to rely on, but as a part of a foundation to build upon so we could make something new.
Mm-hmm. I do kind of love that comparison as well, not just because, I mean, it's Revan, but also the whole point of it is that, I'm going to go deep into a lore tangent.
Yeah, go for it.
Revan as a character, at least the canon iteration of Revan, is all about the balance in Star Wars of the light side of the Force and the dark side of the Force. And it's this idea of, like, you know, a true mastery of both is the thing that's presented at the very end of it all. Mm-hmm. And the reality of the situation within our own story is that we took a very long path in the Light and Dark saga to get to this point of accepting that the light and the dark were not good and evil, but were neutral forces that could be used within the universe, and then finally reaching that point of transcendence in final shape.
Yeah.
So in a weird way, our Guardians very much feel like they've trod that same path,
yes.
Even if we didn't have, you know, horrifying revelations on the Leviathan and
right.
you know, leaving companions behind or anything along those lines. You know, even when we didn't have moments like this, it still brings us to that same kind of story and narrative conclusion. It makes me so happy to see the parallels.
And I mean, so much of like KOTOR's story too, and so much of Star Wars is about choice. Like that, what matters in the end is choice, rather than the actions that you choose to do, rather than like what is prescribed for you to do.
Mm-hmm.
Which weird sounds like the theme of our saga.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Which, oh my gosh, I'm going to throw this out there. And it's very, very rude to do on an interview about a totally different game. But if you have time before Renegades, please, for the love of God, go and do a playthrough of KOTOR.
It's
and KOTOR
really good.
2.
It holds up really well. Please
oh
do it.
Gosh.
It's a lot of fun.
It's absolutely fantastic.
Highly recommend it.
Just, yeah. I'm gonna cut myself off right there, because otherwise I'm going to be stuck on that.
It's okay.
This will no longer be a Renegades interview. Okay, so in this expansion, we do also get a crew that comes along with us, right? And this cast of characters that I think fills a lot of archetypes for a bunch of different characters throughout Star Wars media.
Mm-hmm.
So in particular, it's the Drifter, Eris, Ido, and Arnor.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about each of those characters and the sort of archetypal Star Wars character that they represent and the sort of role that they fill in within the story as a result.
Yeah, it was so fun to come up with the ensemble for this release because it really was just kind of like looking at our inspiration and finding like the easy parallels that we have. Han Solo was always going to be Drifter for us, and Drifter is the center of the story. He is the one who has the most that he is coming into with from his experience in the Edge of Fate. And we knew that we wanted to build into this idea of like someone breaking the rules for the right reasons. Drifter's our guy. If we're going to have our Han Solo, that means we should probably have our Leia. Our Leia also doubles as there's many other very witchy characters inside of deep Star Wars. That's going to be our Eris. And she is here not as someone to be rescued, but someone who does the rescuing. She's a lot of fun. To play with, especially contrasting with some of the other characters in our ensemble that we'll get to in a moment.
She's kind of like a Night Sister Merrin from
totally,
Jedi Survivor.
Totally, yes. Merrin, thank you. That was the name
yes.
that was on the tip
I was
of my
trying
tongue.
To remember
we were trying
all
so
of yesterday.
Hard
oh
yesterday
my God.
Over dinner to try and remember Merrin's name. She's lovely. Ido, weirdly, is kind of our Chewbacca, but mostly she's our alien, right? She's our alien who provides that, like, outside perspective, and is a close friend of Drifter, too. And Honor, it gets to be our Jedi. We jokingly kind of said, if you took Obi-Wan Kenobi and put him in a detective noir, that's Honor, yeah.
Oh my God, detective noir, even down to the point of just like everybody sitting there and seeing Honor walk into the bar and there's dead silence, and you know that within 30 seconds, someone is going to have pulled a gun, and that someone is probably dead.
Exactly. My favorite consistent note to give in the writer's room was, can you up the noir by 30% when writing Honor? And we got a real hard-boiled. She's a lot of fun to play with.
Which is totally appropriate for Honor's character. We'll get more into that later, but like there is a lot that has been done over the many years of her interacting with Drajans or Guardians that have just fallen to darkness. Yeah. And some of those encounters have ended non-violently, and some of them are very much involved on, or yet again, pulling out what was probably a Praxic blade and then saying, okay, no further.
Exactly. There's other characters too. Every character that appears in Renegades, we like to think of some kind of parallel for them. There's a memorable scene in Renegades that you haven't seen yet, where Lodi gets to do some Jedi mind tricks of his own. also... it's really fun. We've also got Zavala here. He makes an appearance to chastise us for doing the wrong thing while also being part of the journey later on.
Yeah, I presume you've got Keith David back for that as well.
We did. Yeah, yeah. Always a pleasure to work with.
Mm-hmm. So, we now at last know for certain that our Praxic Warlock from the trailers in Renegades is in fact Arnor Mahal, the one and only.
It is.
She's obviously a really prominent character in the lore. Anyone who has read Destiny's lore will probably have heard of her.
Mm-hmm.
She's not technically been seen in the game before. Like, yes, Season of the Drifter in the One Quest, but we only get audio communications from her in the form of written logs, mm-hmm. so it's not really so much of an actual present character. It's more kind of like a presence behind the scenes.
That's right.
With that in mind, tell us more about Arnor. What should people know about her going into Renegades? And what's the inspiration behind her character? It feels as though, lore aside, there is a really rich and textured, like, character-building process that's happened with Arnor because she's been in the background lore for years.
Yeah, and that's one of our favorite things to do, is to take those characters that have a rich background strictly in the text and bring them out so everybody can see them and get to experience who they are. Arnor's foundation always has to be her dogmatic view on the world. She sees existence as a binary between light and dark, good and evil. There is a very firm line between those two things. I described her as a Obi-Wan Kenobi in a detective movie, and that's absolutely who she is. She is out to understand the world, and that understanding is going to obviously back up how she sees the world. One of the big struggles that she's going to go through in this release is coming to terms with the fact that the world has changed, that darkness isn't necessarily evil anymore, and maybe the organization that she was working for was holding down a rule that doesn't really make sense in the modern world. So we get to watch her not completely change who she is, but she does get to allow that to kind of seep into who she is now.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important part for us on the narrative side in portraying her was to also make sure that we were honoring her background. Something that happens sometimes when writing lore tabs or like text that ends up in like lore books and stuff is that you have a very like brief space to try and communicate a lot about who somebody is. One thing that was really important about Arnor is that she has a Filipino name. We wanted to make sure that we cast a Filipina actress. Our talent is fantastic. Getting to share that representation was really exciting for us.
Mm-hmm. It's the same with her ghost as well.
Yes.
Am I Balahagari, I think it is?
Rainbow. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which, of course, it fits in with that as well. Which, if I'm remembering some of the earliest stuff I'd seen on Arnor on Reddit, people had already been making that connection years ago.
Yes.
And so it's just very cool to see that that's actually borne out within the actual narrative and the lore of everything.
It meant a lot
too.
To us, yeah.
Yeah. And good on you for being able to actually find someone to cast it who, from experience and having played Renegades and listened to, she absolutely, the voice talent who's done this, absolutely nails the performance of that hard-boiled Obi-Wan Kenobi vibe. It's spot on.
Arnor is portrayed by Dawn Bennett, who is spectacular. She is hard-boiled as they come. She is so tough and so fun. We had such a blast getting to discover who this character was vocally with her.
On the further side of things in Renegades, this may be something where we want to go ahead and hold off some of the information because, you know, inevitably people are going to find this out as they play Renegades, but there is a new enemy faction of that's out there in the universe doing bad things, the Baron Imperium.
Yes.
And they've kind of come out of nowhere. They're completely new to the scene. And in lore terms, there is very little of a prelude that sort of tells us about who they are and where they've come from.
Mm-hmm.
In the trailer, there's speculation they're somehow related and linked in with the Nine, and that they've grown in power so much that the Nine must be involved, is the Drifter's assumption. What can you tell people about this faction and how they're being introduced into the setting?
Yeah, honestly, very little beyond what you've already said, because I don't want to spoil too much. Most of the first act is exploring where did this faction come from, how did they arise so quickly, what's their deal. Most of the main lore book that's going to be unlocked as you play also goes into the origins of the Baron Imperium. But one thing that we really wanted to do was start reinforcing the species name, or the species that is the Cabal. Barrent is what they are called. And this Imperium is a kind of breakaway sect from Keitel's Imperium. Sorry, Keitel's Cabal.
Yeah, because the Cabal generally is kind of a catch-all Imperial name, you know?
Yes.
The Cabal are not actually the Cabal species themselves. Mm-hmm. It is the Barrent is now the kind of established thing. And, you know, the Cabal as a wider thing is the Barrent, the Scions, the Kargapeps, the Arkborn, everything that's kind of like under that big umbrella.
Correct, yes.
Okay. If nothing else, it's really good to have that kind of further classification, because it was always a little bit odd, I feel. Like, there's something where it felt as though there was, you know, we had these, like, terminology pieces within Destiny's lore of like, oh, they speak Ulurant, but they refer to themselves as the Cabal. You know,
yeah.
It's that thing of like, okay, this does actually make a little bit more sense.
Exactly. It was confusing the more that we sat and kind of thought about it. But having those classifications just makes everybody's life easier. So yeah, now they have a species name.
Indeed. Okay, so talked a little bit about the Nine as well earlier. They are central to the Fate Saga, obviously. They're a great engine for speculation questions. And they're also, of course, wrapped up in the story of Destiny. And again, we're not talking about a ton of spoilers. I imagine that people are at some point going to see the first campaign mission playthrough, perhaps, or if not, just a Vidoc or something. Regardless of what's going on, I'd love to talk as much as we can about the place of the Nine in Renegades.
Sure. So, as we learned in the Edge of Fate, the Nine are divided. The Inners and the Outers both want very different things. The Outers want to leave. Reality sucks. They want to get out of here. What's fascinating about the Nine is that even though there are groups inside of them, they're still individuals who can make choices as individuals. And they can have inter-squabbles within the sides that they have. One thing that we're introducing in Renegades is the idea that we can have complexity within the factions of the Nine. And we're going to see some decide to take actions without consulting the others and see the repercussions of that.
Mm-hmm. And boy, are there actions taken.
There's actions. There are actions that are taken.
Okay, also, we see in-game Dredge and Bale. Oh my god, wow.
I love him.
God, what an incredible
bless that
character.
Mess. Yeah.
Oh.
He is so fun. We had such a good time. Like, beginning with that kind of like cookie cutter shape of like, okay, here's a Star Wars villain. How do we make him feel as Destiny as we can? How do we take this and build on in a way that makes him feel complete, like a person? Mm-hmm. And it really clicked for us when we kind of like took this Revan meets Kylo Ren and realize we need to splash in some Kendall Roy. There is an endless pit at the soul of this guy that can only be filled by approval. And once we figured out that like that was the little fire that keeps him going, he became so much fun to write for.
Mm-hmm. And it's also a really big deal because I don't think people have realized this. Aside from the Drifter, who is kind of a mocking ex-Dredge and doesn't really count, this is the first time people have seen a Dredgen in the game.
Ever.
You know, like,
there
have been portrayals in the lore, like, there's been moments where people have done amazing art, but we've never seen one actually in game. And no, the people running around with the Gambit title, they don't count. Like,
respectfully.
You know, read up on the lore, that's not what you actually
and
are.
If you have that title, Dredge and Bale will respect you, so that's kind of fun.
Oh my god, is that a
there's,
thing?
There's like one or two little lines where he acknowledges
that's so cool. Yeah, oh my god, I didn't even realize.
So John Toe was our narrative lead behind this release, and he got to work on the Dredgens originally. So getting to portray them in-game now was something that our team took really, really, really seriously. Dredge and Bale had to be terrifying with a capital T. He had to be invocative, he had to be interesting, and he had to be deadly. And so it was really fun to finally get to see this part of lore out in the open so everyone can see.
Mm-hmm. For like the most general, we kind of jumped ahead with regards to things because it's you've definitely answered the thing about how we're bringing Dredgens into the forefront as like, you know, a bigger part of this mythos.
Yes.
For those who are at home and who have no idea what's going on, could you give us the most like best introductory summary of what a Dredgen is within the universe of Destiny?
Dredgens are dark guardians. They are guardians who have chosen to turn away from the light and embrace darkness and all the different things that could mean. There's a couple of famous ones. There's a couple of former ones, but they've been out of play for a long time. And now we're bringing them back.
And this actually kind of leads on to another question. I'm going to avoid the super deep lore version for the sake of not getting caught up in all of the minutiae.
Very kind of you.
So I'm just as a preface for anyone listening to this who is furiously typing it into the comments, I'm getting there. I know what you're thinking, but we're not doing the complex version of it. When it comes to the Dredgens in the original story, the very first Dredgen, a guy called Dredgen Yor, was killed by a rather complicated figure in the lore called Chin Malfa. And, you know, he has a ton of lore of his own. He is one of the owners of the Last Word over its long and storied history. Mm-hmm. And my question for this, I know what the answer to this is, not based on the fact of having seen anything in Renegades, but more on the fact of it's a lore question that's very persistent, but there is an answer out there.
Oh, yeah.
The question is just, is his story one we should watch in Renegades?
In Renegades specifically, no. Mm-hmm. But if anyone remembers my metaphor about the fridge, about how all ideas in our story will exist in our minds, and they are ideas that we can and should pay attention to and pull out when necessary, Shin Malfur belongs in there. He's someone that we care a lot about, and I'm very interested in.
Right. And it's, you know, I think it's important to ask and also to point it out because, you know, this is a thing that is answered within the lore. There's the lore book that comes along with Lumina from way back in the Season of Opulence, and that's the Nothing Ends lore book. And the last two entries of that do clarify, yeah, my story in this is done. It's your turn, speaking to us as the player.
Exactly.
So it's just worth noting because, you know, he is very central to all of this. Yeah. And it would be weird to sit there and think of a story of Dredgens without at least clarifying of, like, what is the fate of, you know, Dredgen Vale in all of this?
He has hung up his hat, but he's definitely still alive.
Mm-hmm. The man with the golden gun still out there somewhere on the frontier. All right. And one of the last questions I really have on this is to do with the Praxic Order. We've kind of touched on this a little bit as well, but they have also been in the lore for years and have had a really well-defined place within the lore, including a lot of important characters.
Yes.
You know, you can't mention the Hive and Crota without mentioning Eriana III and Waning, Eriana being the only one of the Praxix, of course. But the point is, they're in a very interesting place narratively, right? So the first thing, this is just the basic part of the question, is what can you tell people about the Praxic Order and what should they know if they're trying to understand this, like, place within the story of Renegades?
Simplest definition is they're the ones who are in the Vanguard. They're the ones who are concerned with law. They are concerned with keeping peace. There's a right and a wrong. What they do is kind of complicated because there's also some researchy elements to them. They care a lot about ensuring that the order as it stands remains as it stands. There's a dogmatic nature to the Praxic Order that is explored in lore a little bit, and we get to see Honor really live up to uphold that mantle in here. And during our experience in Renegades, we're going to get to see some of the more hidden aspects of the Praxic Order, some of their own locations, some of their temples, some of their secret places.
Mm. And of course, like, this is the very easy in, as has been put long ago in the marketing of Renegades, that they are our Jedi equivalents.
Exactly.
But it's a really interesting equivalent because in this, you know, in the world of Star Wars, there are some shades of grey, especially if you look at, you know, pieces of media like Andor, where it shows entirely that, like, yeah, there are evil aspects on both sides of things. But in the grandest scheme of things, especially when it comes to the movies, there's a very easily defined evil and good. And generally speaking, Jedi are good and Sith are evil. But the reality of the situation is that light and dark in Destiny, of course, they're neutral forces of the universe. And as a result, you can try and do as the Praxix have done and equate one to being good and one to being evil. But the reality of the situation is not actually that at all. They've had a really tough realization of that over the last few years, especially with the conclusion of the Light and Dark saga.
Yes.
So my question, which is really a follow-on from all this, is how much is that point of the Praxix being an order out of sync with the times going to be addressed? I know we touched on this a little bit before, but I think it's one of the more important things to understand about the Praxix is just, it's not an order that is completely correct, right? Like, this is not the Jedi with some kind of unimpeachable wisdom, even though I think a lot of the Jedi's wisdom is not always unimpeachable.
Sure.
You know, like, there's a lot of flaws.
That's right. And that's one of the things that makes Destiny different from Star Wars. We exist in kind of a permanent moral gray on our side. Both of these neutral forces can be used for good and for evil in different ways. I think that we are going to directly address where the Praxic Order stands and have some pretty bold choices that are made in order to kind of stand against them through Honor and what she does, but also in learning about what they do and what we decide to unleash to the world.
Mm-hmm. Do we learn any lore about where the Praxic Blades come from or were made?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. If you had a Praxic Blade, what color are you going with?
Oh, man, I can't tell you.
I'm not gonna lie, I have trouble deciding as well.
Yeah, I'll go with green. I always like green. It's OG.
Green is a very, very good choice.
Yeah.
Favorite character in Renegades that has been revealed thus far?
Bale. I love Bale. Blue is a very close second. Very, 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 very close. But I think it's Bale for me.
Gotcha. For the memes, will there be pod racing?
No. A girl can dream.
A girl can dream.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay.
You know, but just two people getting out their sparrows. Is that not pod racing?
No, it's pretty close.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, it's basically the same thing. Absolutely.
Functionally, it's the same thing.
Functionally identical, yeah. You just need a track and a place where you can actually go at speed. Yeah.
Exactly.
When it comes to the syndicates, their stories, really interesting potential narrative ground to build on things. Tharsis Reformation, in particular, I think is a really keen one to go ahead and take a look at. How much more is the Vex becoming independent going to evolve as a story beat?
I want to keep it going. It's fascinating as hell. I know all of us on the story team are stoked by it. There's some really great lore that we got a chance to write because of this. And some really fun interactions that you can have with some members of the syndicates, too.
Awesome. Okay, well, thank you again for having an interview with me, Alison. I really appreciate every single time we get to sit down and take a moment to talk.
Same. It's always a joy. And great to spend time with you in this bunker/office cube.
And we'll now step out of the foxhole and return to battle with, hopefully, a drink in hand somewhere. I don't know. Where are the drinks in this place?
It's all kombucha.
Fair enough.
That's not bad. No.
We'll live with it. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.